Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing good, Justin. How are you?
I am doing wonderful. We have just a few announcements before we get into this.
Someone had written in about having a dream about meeting me. And long story short, she was inspired to join our Patreon. But then someone else chimed in and asked, what's Patreon? For anyone that doesn't know what Patreon is yet, it's basically like a podcast fan club, and there are many podcasts on Patreon. And what you do is you subscribe. It could be $1, $2, whatever the charges are a month, and then you get extra content every month.
It's crowdsourcing for any creator that's out there on the system.
And if you ask Justin or I, we will credit our multiple meetups being scheduled for this year to the support we're getting on Patreon, because we're using money from that to fund the flights and hotels and booking venues for these meetups. So it's incredible, and we love the support. And then also, we will be at CrimeCon this year, and we're very much looking forward to it. If you want to go and don't have your ticket, use code GENY to save 10% off your tickets.
It's going to be cool. If you didn't go to CrimeCon last year, it's a gathering of like-minded folks that are all into true crime, and there is a ton of big names in the scene. And besides ourselves, Ryan Ferguson's going to be there, Nancy Grace, people like that. All right, tonight's case is about a lottery winner. At least here in the States, we have state and national lotteries where you buy a ticket and you can win a lot of money. I know they have them in Europe and other places, but in the States, essentially private consulting companies will lobby state governments to bring in lotteries to raise budget revenue. If you buy a ticket for the lottery, it's nearly impossible to win. And even if you do win, if a state is in a budget crisis, well, they might have to give you an IOU. Not really sure what what the problems are with lottery and with that, because I assume that lottery should be the silver bullet for budget problems.
I mean, there's a big draw to participate in the lottery because, heck, I mean, you can't win if you don't play.
Exactly. You got to play to win. But, you know, we kill thousands of trees to print off these tickets that just get discarded in parking lots, just like the lost dreams that they carried. I can think of a lot of other trees we could grow that would generate the same amount of revenue, but I digress. I have a fairly low opinion about the lottery, but hey, it makes some people's dreams come true. But stats vary from 45 to 70% of lotto winners go broke in less than 5 years. Regular people struggle to understand the tremendous pressures that a windfall of money can bring. Our egos and yearning to live like the other half is usually what draws us to it.
Having a lot of money can introduce a lot of problems. Now, it's not because I know personally, but I have read stories. And one of the stories I'd read in the past was Will Smith would get sackfuls of letters. And many of these letters were just asking for $500 or $1,000 or $10,000. Please to help with medical bills, save our home. He can't possibly help everybody, but many people know who he is. They know he has a lot of money. And so the pleas go out to him. And just imagine if you win a ton of money, whether it's $1 million or $10 million, you will have former friends, current friends, family members, ex-family members, anybody you know, everybody you know coming out of the woodwork asking for money.
Yeah, it screws up relationships, screws up friendships. At best, it's a tax on the poor, and at worst, it's a curse on the winner. So, we have a man named Abraham Lee Shakespeare. By the way, I love his name. Abraham Shakespeare, that you just can't get any better than that. If you saw Abraham walking down the street, he is 6'5", 190 pounds, usually not wearing the best of clothes. He was born April 23rd, 1966. He was raised in a very poor family. He was illiterate. He could not read or write. So opportunities of employment were very limited for him. He was doing different jobs, but one of his jobs was at a company called MBM Corp. He was a food delivery driver, so him and another guy would drive around in a truck and deliver packaged foods. November 15th, 2006, Abraham and his coworker Michael Ford would stop by a convenience store and buy a ticket, or buy two tickets, actually. One of these tickets was a winner for a pot of $30 million. Now, Michael Ford would say that he bought both of the tickets and Abraham paid him back for one of them, whereas Abraham says he paid for one of them and Michael bought the other. It's really unclear how the mix-up happened, but Michael is not happy that Abraham ended up with a $30 million ticket and he ended up with a piece of paper. Michael will end up suing Abraham for his winnings. He demands $1 million of Abraham's winnings, whereas Abraham was actually willing to pay him $250,000 or $250,000, but that wasn't good enough for Michael. So they end up going to court, where Michael will actually end up losing his case against Abraham, and he'll get nothing. So right off the bat, Abraham loses his best friend, Michael Ford, over this lottery winning.
So he didn't end up giving him anything?
No, because he said he was willing to give him $250,000, but Michael was too impatient and demanding of $1 million. So he took him to court and Abraham fought him in court.
So we don't even think that he went back after and said, I'll take the $250,000. You think he just said, you're a jerk?
Yeah, Abraham's just, we're done. You're not my friend anymore and I've already been burned.
So that's $30 million. How much are we talking about here? Because there are different ways to get paid out, depending on the state, depending on the lottery.
Yeah, you can take it as an annuity over several years, or you can take a lump sum payout. But when you do the lump sum, they take big old penalties, almost half. So for $30 million, I've seen it reported that Abraham took home anywhere from 14 to 17 million. Abraham was also working on and off at a barbershop, sweeping up cut hair and doing miscellaneous jobs for a man named Gary Smith. Gary was, you know, a small business. He's got his own financial problems. And Gary was trying to get a loan for $63,000 from the bank. He was getting the runaround. So Abraham said, hey, pay me back. Here's the $63,000. And he writes him a check. Gary, he's going to jump at this opportunity. He's like, sure, I'll take it. This shows how generous Abraham is. He's willing to just loan his friend $63,000. After he wins, he's hanging out with one of his cousins at the bar, and his cousin introduces him to Centoria Butler and says, hey, you need to meet my cousin Abraham. He happens to be a millionaire. And Centoria is 25 years old. Of course, you know, Abraham's a good-looking guy. He's a simple guy. And he's a millionaire. So they start dating, and she will end up getting pregnant by Abraham. Abraham also has a child from a previous relationship. Again, he's very generous with his money. He will take Miss Butler on a plane to New York just for an overnight stay so they can eat a nice dinner anywhere they want. His family, of course, is coming out of the woodwork. His friends are coming out of, or wannabe friends are coming out of the woodwork, asking him for cash. He's even getting letters from prisoners behind bars in jails and prisons all around the world asking him for money because his name's public. It's public record. Everybody knows this guy's a millionaire. And anyone that knows anything about him knows that he is very vulnerable because of his lack of education, his lack of life experiences with finances.
But who would really be prepared to handle a $30 million lottery winning? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's the problem here is we all think that we would be able to handle this. But if you look at NFL players that get their contract, you have these college kids that are signing $1 million contracts and their life goes to crap. And like I said, up to 70% of lotto winners are broke in 5 years.
Yeah, I just want to make that clear in case anybody tries to say, well, this guy wasn't ready for this money. I mean, most anybody wouldn't be ready for that money. And that's backed up by history. But he is doing some good with the money.
Oh, he's paying off people's loans and mortgages.
Yeah, especially family members. He has a sister, mother. He has a brother. So from the get-go, we have this very generous guy who never had much money. His family was poor, and now he has $30 million.
His mother, who's very religious, thinks the money's the devil. She does not want a lot of his money. She doesn't want his help financially because she thinks that this is a curse, and she has no idea how right she was. Shakespeare and Butler have a child, and about at age one is when they go through a breakup. Abraham moves on. And again, this is issues with money, people asking him for money, and he just doesn't want to be around folks.
But where is he at financially? Because he got this payout of around $14 to $17 million, and he's spending a lot of it.
He's blowing through it like nobody's business. At this point, around $5 to $8 million. So he's spent at least 10. It's around this point where a woman named Doris Dee Dee Moore, she goes by Dee Dee, walks into Abraham's life. Dee Dee claims to be an author, a publicist, and she wants to write a book about Abraham's rags to riches story. She's very flashy. She's 35 years old. She's very confident and very financially literate, whereas Abraham has zero literacy in financials or just anything, really. So he needs somebody to help him. He needs an advisor, a life coach, a financial advisor. So he's more than happy to take Dee Dee on as a friend. Dee Dee says she needs an office to write this book, and Abraham will end up buying her a $700,000 home that she will put in her business name. She will tell Abraham, you know, if you want to get people to stop asking you for money, we need to transfer your winnings into my business. Then people will stop asking you for all this money.
Because he won't have it to give out anymore.
Exactly.
And then if he needs it, she can give him money.
When they first met, it said that he received almost 8 phone calls in a half hour time from people asking for money, people wanting to borrow money or just get a handout. So as far as we know, Abraham is compliant with this or complicit because he has this woman that's helping him with things. Now, Abraham is spending his money. It's going out the window just as fast as it came in. And he's going on trips. He is visiting different places. He is paying off people's loans just because he's so generous. He even says that he sent one of the prisoners in jail $100 and just said, here you go, man. I hope you have a better life. But Dee Dee is trying to control every aspect of Abraham's life. She even videotapes him asking him what he thinks about all the pressure of all the people asking him for money. And it breaks my heart because you see Abraham talking and he's like, you know, people just, they won't stop. They won't take no for an answer. She asks, where do you want to go? Where do you want to visit? Where do you want to disappear to get away from all this? And she starts saying Cozumel and different locations around the world. And of course, Abraham is agreeing and going along with whatever her plan is. Even though Abraham has won the lottery, won millions of dollars, he still is hanging out at the barbershop. He still is hanging out at the superfood store down the street.
So even though he's accruing jewelry and he has a home that's valued at more than $1.5 million, he's still the same guy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he bought himself a million-dollar home. He bought Dee Dee a $750,000 home. He bought himself a Rolex and a nicer car. Or a car, because I don't even know if he owned one before this. And he ends up gifting Dee Dee some money. But after a while, his friends stop seeing him around. He stops showing up at the barbershop. He stops showing up at the superfood store. He's not really in contact with anybody. And his family will call him multiple times, checking on him. But the problem here is a lot of these people owe him money. A lot of these people are in debt to him. So if he's not getting back, if he's not around, well, that's not as quite a big deal to them because they're like, I don't have to pay right now. I don't have to be making payments to Abraham because, well, he's not answering his phone and he's nowhere to be found.
And since Dee Dee Moore has been representing him, maybe she knows where he's at?
Well, yeah. She tells people that he's sick of being asked for money and that he's keeping a low profile. He's traveling around, which makes sense. Sometimes people will get text messages back from Abraham saying, I'm okay. Don't worry about me. I'm having a good time. I'm in Cozumel. But they're always text messages. It's never a phone call. And his cousin will be texting back and forth a little bit and she'll think, well, this is kind of weird because he's using these really big words. And as we know, he couldn't read or write. Or if he did, it was at a very low level. So texting seems a little suspicious. Dee Dee will go on to tell people that Abraham actually went to Haiti and she hasn't heard from him after the big earthquake that happened. She'll tell others that he actually contracted AIDS and he's seeking treatment for this. She'll say, since he won the lottery and he has all this money, he's taken on a pretty nasty drug habit and a drinking habit, and he's seeking treatment for that. Or he's hanging out with really bad people and she just doesn't really want anything to do with him right now. People are definitely starting to wonder where he is. Dee Dee will end up paying his cousin, Cedric Edom, $5,000 to deliver a letter to Abraham's mother with a $100 check in there and a cross and a nice message saying, hey, mom, I'm okay. Dee Dee is actually hanging out with Abraham's mother and praying with her and saying, I know Abraham's okay. I know he'll return soon. If we just pray, everything will be okay. She takes Abraham's mother out to dinner at a Cracker Barrel one night. And lo and behold, she gets a call on her phone from Abraham. And she hands it over to his mother and says, hey, Abraham just called me. Do you want to talk to him? Here he is. And his mother will get on the phone and hear Abraham say, hey, mom, I'm okay. I'm just staying away from the world right now. And this is how it goes for about 7 months.
But that's good news, right? If he's contacting Dee Dee and he's contacting his mother, then maybe he does just need to get away.
I don't blame him if that's what he's doing. He's just dropped off the face of the earth.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called StoryWorth. StoryWorth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, StoryWorth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/GenY. That's StoryWorth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
At the same time, Dee Dee has bought a Humvee that's valued around $100,000. She's bought her 24-year-old boyfriend a $70,000 Corvette. She also bought herself a brand new pickup truck that is valued at around $50,000 to $60,000. She's purchased other properties, and she's taken control of Abraham Shakespeare's million-dollar home.
But that's so that no one can ask him for the money, right? I mean, he can lie low. No one can ask him for money because he doesn't have control of it anymore. Everything's cool, right?
Exactly. That's her statements to the world. Well, Abraham's cousin and his mother, they're worried about him. And his cousin will end up filing a missing persons report. They're telling investigators, hey, we got a letter from him. We got text messages from him. But the guy can't read or write. We're not able to talk to him on the phone. And the one time his mother did talk to him on the phone, she said it didn't sound like his voice. She said it did sound like a male African-American's voice, but it didn't sound like her Abraham. She knows her son's voice, and that wasn't it. After this phone call at Cracker Barrel, the police had traced the call, and they knew where the call had come from. And it was Gary Smith. Remember the barber that had borrowed $63,000? Well, it was his voice on the line. And Dee Dee had told him, if you call Abraham's mother and say, I'm doing okay, don't worry about me, I will forgive the $63,000 debt that you have with Abraham. And remember, Dee Dee's in charge of his finances, so the debt is to her now, not Abraham.
Does he know that anything weird is going on with this, or is he just looking at it as, well, my buddy's cool, he's somewhere else, but this is a good way for me to get my debt erased?
That's it. He's thinking more about himself and getting the debt erased. He's not really questioning what's going on. You know, if all you need to do is make a phone call and say, hey, mom, I'm okay, and that's worth $63,000, you might do it. his cousin that delivered the letter for $5,000. Well, he just thinks that, oh, this lady's going to pay me $5,000 to deliver this letter. She's telling him, you know, Abraham's out and about. He's getting AIDS treatment. He's traveling the world. His family's worried about him, but I want them to know that he's okay. So just help me out.
Hasn't she also told other people, including Centoria Butler, that Abraham has run off with another woman?
There's a different story for every person she talks to. So she's telling his ex-girlfriend, he doesn't want to talk to you anymore. He's found a new woman. She's telling his friends, yeah, you burned a bridge with him. He doesn't want to talk to you anymore. He just doesn't want to talk to anybody. And eventually she'll tell people, oh yeah, he died of AIDS, which is just remarkable that she would know this, but and be able to relay that information. Well, after this phone call, Gary Smith is driving away and the cops pull him over and say, hey, we know that you made this phone call to Abraham's mother. We're taking you into the station for questioning. And at this point, Gary's like, oh, wow, what did I do? His exact words were, oh, Jesus, what did I give myself into? And he has no idea the depth of this. According to him, he was just making a phone call. Now, I know a lot of our listeners, the red flags are going off and we're like, how would he not know? How would any of these people not know? Why would you do that? Why would you call somebody's mom and say that you're her son and that you're okay? And I'm right there with you. I think that greed and this idea of, well, Abraham's okay, is just because some of us can't comprehend horrible things happening to the ones we love. Gary is now in police custody. The police are telling him, we suspect that Dee Dee is involved with the murder of Abraham, and you're an accomplice. You just made a phone call for her. And they question him, and they find out that he did this to forgive a debt. So, wow, Gary's in deep. Gary will agree to work with the police and wear a wire around Dee Dee. He's not comfortable with this, but, well, hey, it's better than being charged as an accessory to murder, right?
Right. And I mean, do we even really know how well he knew this woman? I mean, obviously he knew Abraham, so it might not just be the possible prison sentence that he could be looking at. It might also be, hey, wait a minute, maybe something's going on with my friend that I don't know about.
Exactly. So his first meet with Dee Dee, he drives up, she gets in his car, his truck, and she's being really flirty with him. She's kind of grabbing a hold of him, touching his shirt. He says, get out of my truck, get out of here, because she had actually grabbed a hold of that wire. And of course, the investigators are not happy that he aborted the mission, but all they're hearing is the audio. They're not seeing what's happening. And he's telling them, like, she was checking me for a wire. Like, that was in her mind that this was a setup. So we're going to have to do this a different way. The cops, they're like, just wear the wire and we'll make this work. But Gary says that he's from the streets and he knows what to do. And he has an idea. He drinks Red Bull every day. And this episode is not brought to you by Red Bull, but we'll take them as a sponsor if they want. So he takes a Red Bull can and he shaves off the top of the can, but keeps it intact. He puts a piece of foam in the bottom of the can. He puts the microphone inside the can, and then he puts a little thing on top of the microphone and puts the top of the can back on.
So he's bugged the car rather than himself.
Yeah. And not only has he put this microphone in the can, but then when he meets with Dee Dee, he smokes cigarettes and ashes into the can, or at least on top of it. So Dee Dee would not want to take a swig or inspect the can because it looks like an ashtray he's using. Smokers do that. They use cans or whatever to ash into instead of their ashtray in their car because it makes the car smell. So if you do it into a tin can, then you throw that out. There you go. He will record conversations with Dee Dee for several weeks, many, many hours of interviews with Dee Dee.
But this is normal because when you're trying to get someone to give you information that they're not so readily going to give out, sometimes it takes time. You have to build up some trust. And like I said before, we don't know how well Gary and Dee Dee knew each other, right?
Yeah, they didn't know each other very well at all. He was friends with Abraham, not friends with Dee Dee. Dee Dee's only been in the picture for a few months. But Dee Dee does need help because people in town are harassing her, saying, what did you do with Abraham? Why did you kill Abraham? And so now she's got Gary to be on her side and hopefully help her deal with this damage control and telling people, hey, Abraham's okay. And so she's sort of recruiting Gary to help her. Little does she know, Gary's recruited by the police trying to get her to give up information. In the first handful of meetings they have, she's not talking about Abraham and his whereabouts. She's talking about the problem she's having with family members and people around town. She's not giving anything up, but Gary keeps directing the conversation back to Abraham and what they need to do about it and where the money is. Eventually, Dee Dee will say, hey, I need help moving Abraham's body, which, wow.
That's big, though. That's not a slip up. That's everything.
Yeah. She has this property out by Plant City, and she takes Gary out there. There's this concrete pad in the backyard on her property, and she says, he's buried underneath that. And Gary says, well, I don't want to get out of the car and be seen with you, but there's, you know, it's a freshly laid concrete pad, and there's reinforcement, like rebar, around the pad. And he says, just go out there, pick up a rebar, which is a big metal rod, and place it on that pad where his body is. Because it's like it's a 20 or 30 foot long concrete pad that's made for like boats or RVs to be parked on. And he says, I don't want to get out and be seen with you, but you just place that rod wherever his body is. And then I'll come out, you know, early in the morning and dig him up and get him moved for you. So she's just admitted that Abraham is dead and that he's buried in her backyard under a freshly poured concrete slab.
She has to be connected then, right?
You would think.
And she was the one in control of his finances.
Yep. So Gary is telling her, well, people are looking for him. We need a plan to get people off your back. She's already told the lie of Abraham was hanging out with drug dealers because he had a terrible drug habit. Gary says, well, let's come up with a drug dealer that killed him named Ronald. And she's like, great. And then Gary says, well, I know a guy that's going to prison for like a life sentence. If you pay him $50,000, he'll say that he killed Abraham and take the rap for it because he's going to prison anyways. And we'll give that money to this man's family to take care of them while he goes off to prison. Of course, Dee Dee likes this idea because now the heat is off her. Dee Dee says that she can't come up with $50,000, so she's going to need some time, which I don't know why she can't come up with $50,000 because she has Abraham's millions in her bank account.
At the time that Abraham disappeared, he only had about 14 grand left in the bank, right?
Yeah, there's different reportings, but yeah, in his own money, 14 grand is what we got.
Obviously, there are assets, there are homes that are worth a lot of money. So it's not as though there's no access to money. But let's just say that maybe she's not willing to sell off an asset to get the money, at least not right away.
So she offers him $10,000 as a down payment. So Gary goes to the cops. They have all the recordings. They've been listening this entire time and says, I need an undercover to pose as my friend that's going to jail. And they bring him in and he talks to Dee Dee. They agree on the $10,000 payment up front and that he will take the rap. But in order for him to prove that he actually murdered Abraham, he says, I'm going to need something connecting me to the crime. Do you have the murder weapon? Okay. And up to this point, Dee Dee hasn't said anything about how Abraham died, what his demise was. But she agrees, and she hands over a 38 snub-nosed revolver, says, this is the gun, so take that, and they'll be able to tie that back to Abraham. I mean, this is just stupid at this point, right? Like,
stupid or desperate.
Now this undercover agent has a murder weapon, or what is alleged to be the murder weapon of Abraham Shakespeare. And Gary Smith has provided hours and hours of recordings from Dee Dee concocting this plan to cover up a murder of a poor man that won millions of dollars.
And let's quickly say again, he bought the ticket in Frostproof, Florida on November 15th, 2006. And then he was likely killed around April 7th of 2009. So we're talking less than 3 years.
Yeah, 2.5 years. So these police officers, these investigators, they have all of this evidence against Dee Dee, but they don't have a body. And as we know, it's not easy to find somebody guilty without a body. So they execute search warrants against her property in Plant City, and they go dig up that concrete pad in her backyard.
It's, I think, a sure bet because she'd already given away a lot of information, and then she handed over the supposed murder weapon to try and ensure that she wouldn't go down for the crime. So that's, I would say, a good amount of evidence to move on her property with.
Mm-hmm. They find Abraham's body buried about 5 feet down underneath the concrete pad, exactly where she left that metal bar. So she had knowledge of where he was buried. So they move against her. Now that they've found his body, he has been shot twice in the chest with what appears to be a 38 caliber pistol. So it doesn't take much to connect the dots here. They bring Dee Dee in for questioning. They ask her, what happened? We just want to know what happened to Abraham. And she has every answer in the book for them. She's crying. She's saying, oh, well, this guy named Ronald, who's a drug dealer, killed him. But if you remember, Ronald doesn't exist. Gary Smith was Ronald. It was his idea. That was his whole game to facilitate this cover-up of Abraham with Dee Dee. But it was all orchestrated by the police and Gary Smith. She tries to give the description of the undercover agent. Well, that guy, he was working with the cops, so there's no Ronald in this picture. She will then go on to say that her 14-year-old son actually shot Abraham in a altercation over money, which, okay. They're not believing that either, but hey, they're like, okay, we can arrest your 14-year-old son and bring him in too. This changes to Gary Smith was the one that orchestrated all of this against me. And he's the one that killed Abraham, and he's framed me for this crime. And of course, the investigators are like, well, actually, we were working with him. We were speaking to him 10 times a day, getting daily reports on what was happening. And we have the audio that he's recording you with. So what's your next answer? But she just keeps going and going and going. Well, obviously, her lies are not going well with the investigators or the prosecutor for that matter, and they file charges against her, and she will see her day in court.
The trial began on November 29th, 2012 in Tampa, Florida. Now, the prosecutor starts the trial by laying out that Dee Dee Moore stole $1.3 million from Abraham Shakespeare and murdered him on or about, I think it was April 6th or April 7th of 2009, and that she had his body buried behind her house under a slab of concrete. So right away, they're laying out, this woman's guilty. This is what she did. Find her guilty. I mean, that's how they begin the trial. They have a lot of evidence against her.
And she has the alleged murder weapon that she produced and handed over to the police.
I know sometimes we tend to talk 15 minutes about a trial, but quite honestly, when you have this much evidence against somebody, sometimes there are people that are so obviously guilty, not just in perception, but I mean evidence-wise, that it seems like this is just a foregone conclusion. But again, she does have a defense, and her lawyer tries to say that you can't connect my client to Shakespeare's murder. You can't connect her to the murder weapon. She was trying to do right by him. She was protecting his assets from all these people who wanted to rob him blind. How does this trial go for her, Justin? Because there are many people that are witnesses that speak out against her during this trial.
Well, her whole, I guess, story or defense is that a man named Ronald killed Abraham and threatened her life. You find out that she had her ex-husband bring in a backhoe to her backyard and dig a hole under the pretense that it was a trash pit. Then, instead of a trash pit, it was supposed to be a hole for her and Abraham to bury their money in the ground so no one could access it. And then the concrete pad was to keep rain and water from getting to the money. But then, somehow, these terrible drug dealers and Ronald, again, Ronald doesn't exist, killed Abraham and stuck him in the hole. Their defense is there's no fingerprint evidence, there's no DNA evidence, there's no witnesses tying her to the murder, so it's all circumstantial. Yeah, it's circumstantial.
You got nothing on her.
Yeah, she's produced the murder weapon, she knew where he was buried, and these drug dealers that she says killed him don't exist because they were all fabricated by Gary Smith.
And she was in control of his assets, and she took out money for herself and was buying, you know, this Corvette, this Hummer, and went on this vacation.
So as they bring the witnesses on, Dee Dee is actually having crazy outbursts during trial, screaming, "Liars, you're lying. That's not true." And 5 out of the 9 days of the trial, the judge has to stop proceedings and tell her to shut up pretty much and wait for her to, you know, recompose herself. She chooses not to take the stand in her own defense. She will claim that her lawyer told her that it would be a bad idea. Meanwhile, her lawyer says, no, she decided not to take the stand and I can't make my client do it. She says that there was DNA evidence found that does not belong to her, so that proves that there was somebody else at the scene that killed him. But again, there are so many lies, so many twisted tales that it's hard to keep them all straight. The prosecution, the investigators were able to tie the gun back to her because she went and had purchased that weapon from a gun store just prior to the murder. She even went through a gun shooting training class provided by that gun store. That undercover agent that was saying, hey, I need stuff tying me to this crime. Not only did she give him the gun, but they said, go and buy some gloves, some duct tape, plastic, sheeting, and give me all of that so I have something to wrap the body up with. So she goes and buys all these things. Again, this is just one more piece of evidence that shows that she was not only the perpetrator of this crime, but she was fully willing to cover it up with Gary Smith and this other agent for the police. And there were no drug dealers. There was nobody involved here except her.
Also, if you're not disgusted by her enough at this point, she writes to TV producers and publicists trying to sell her story as a victim of the justice system to pay for her defense, to just get more money. You can find letters out there that were submitted in court as evidence where she's approaching different TV producers. It's unbelievable.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements, I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee.
Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
If you want to watch some of the proceedings on this case, if you want to go out to YouTube and watch her in trial, let me tell you, it's a circus.
There are times when during a trial, a judge will make statements to let the entire courtroom know that they have a real problem with the defendant. And in this case, that happens with the judge. Judge Battles called her cold, calculating, and cruel. And he also said that she was probably the most manipulative person this court has ever seen.
Now, that was after the jury came back with deliberations. And they were only gone a couple hours with guilty of first-degree murder. There was no real question for them. And like I said, they have a mountain of evidence against her and all of these witnesses that place her with him. But again, she's going through and shooting all this down, saying that she was threatened by imaginary drug dealers and whatnot. She maintains her innocence to this day. You can find interviews with her on 2020 and whatnot, where she says, "Everyone that thinks I'm guilty is stupid. You're ignorant and you don't know what you're talking about. I was framed for this. I was the victim here. The justice system has murdered me." How does somebody like Dee Dee get to this point, Aaron? Because I am just looking at this and thinking, well, was she just overcome with greed and had this opportunity to take a man named Abraham Shakespeare and just take advantage of him, or what?
As far as we can tell, yes.
What's her background?
Dee Dee's mother has spoken at length about Dee Dee. As a young child, Dee Dee didn't come across the way she does later in life. As a young girl, she attended church. She joined the Missionettes and the Girl Scouts. The Missionettes are young girls who are mentored by women's group to bring them closer to Jesus Christ. Sometime around the time that she started attending Plant City High School, she started to really feel that her family was poor in relation to the other kids. And so she was ashamed by this. And so anytime that she needed to go anywhere and her parents needed to take her, she would have them drop her off a fair distance from where her destination was so that no one would see her family's vehicles.
So she's ashamed of their status, their level in society. She knows that they look like they're poor and the car's not very nice. Her clothes aren't very nice. So she wants zero attachment to this.
Her mother was a certified nursing assistant, and that's what Dee Dee aimed for. She became a certified nursing assistant later in 1991. A certified nursing assistant, they're considered helpful liaisons between the RNs, the registered nurses, and their patients. So they do a lot of patient prep work, and they gather information so that by the time the registered nurse comes in to work with the patient, they already know what they're dealing with. And so it just makes treatment and care that much more efficient. This is interesting because if you know any nurses, nurses are some of the best people in our society. To know what Dee Dee has done already and to hear that she was a nursing assistant previous to that, it's really eye-opening, I think. She also had a very good reputation as a CNA and would buy people things. She would help people out every chance she got. So again, a great reputation early on. And in 1992, she married her boyfriend, James Moore. They had a child together, a son. Their marriage lasted 16 years. It's not as though Dee Dee went from this great person to murdering Abraham Shakespeare. There's actually some other stuff going on in her past that tells us that she was on her way down.
No, this didn't happen overnight.
I would say going through her past, the most significant thing that I could find was on June 20th, 2001, she told detectives that she was carjacked. At the time, she had a Lincoln Navigator. She said that these men who were outside of a post office in Eastern Hillsboro bound her with electrical tape and raped her and then threw her into a ditch.
And took off with her car.
She described the men who took her. She said they had clean cut faces and blue green tattoos. That's the direct quote. The detectives wanted more details about how she was raped, and Dee Dee was very uncomfortable with this. They need more information if they can get it out of her. They're taking this crime seriously. And so she did add, so anyways, they had sex with me and it hurt.
She even goes to the hospital and has a rape kit done.
Yeah, they asked her to consent to a rape exam. But the problem with this is the detectives look into this incident, and as far as they can tell, it never happened.
Well, they find out that there was nothing on her that shows that she was raped. And that Lincoln Navigator, they find it in her garage.
They also discover that it was in the process of being repossessed. So she was about to lose this vehicle. I already laid out that she has a real problem with being poor. She wants to be of higher status. And if you want some status, a Lincoln Navigator doesn't hurt, right?
Yeah. She's getting this SUV repoed. She hides it in her garage and she concocts this entire plan, this story that she was carjacked and raped by, I think I read that she said they were Hispanics that did this. And then you find out that the entire story is a lie.
And she had some debts, although I don't think these debts are that great, but she had $6,500 in credit card debt and unpaid car payments. She was $9,800 short on her house lease. At the time, she was also selling prepaid Nextel cell phones, but she was under investigation for fraud in relation to that. So this ruse didn't work, and Dee Dee Moore was sentenced to 1 year of probation and community service. She was also ordered to pay restitution and court costs. So not only did her ruse not work, she's in debt, and now she has all these added restitution and court costs added on.
Bad decision, right?
Yeah. And this is what happens. It's almost like going to the casino and you're already down so much, but you think, oh, maybe I can win and then end up ahead, but then you just lose more. This is what happened to Dee Dee. I don't want to paint this as Dee Dee's completely helpless. I mean, she does end up creating a business, which is American Medical Professionals, and it's a nursing staffing agency in 2004. The business was said to be doing quite well, but, and as we said early on at the start, she ends up meeting Abraham Shakespeare in 2007. You asked me, Justin, was this just a crime of opportunity? Look, if you can take a shortcut, you might just take a shortcut. Now, not all of us are willing to commit crimes to get that shortcut, but Dee Dee Moore was. She was sick and tired of having to scrape by, and she wanted to be on top. And that's how I see this, is she saw this opportunity. There's this very nice man who came into a lot of money, and he was very generous with it. She suckered him into having her help him. You know, she portrayed herself as, I'm a very competent person. I will protect you. I will help you get through this. She took advantage of him. We do know, though, his family has said that he figured this out. At some point, he figured out that she was taking him for his money and that he was going to do something about it. And that was right about the time that he disappeared.
So it's possible that he confronted her and she took that moment to gun him down and then deal with how to dispose of Abraham Shakespeare. So Shakespeare's family and estate ended up suing Dee Dee for all of these lost assets. And really, they were under Dee Dee's company. So they were suing her company, the American Medical Professionals, where, you know, she, whatever shell companies she came up with to take over Abraham's assets.
She also had Abraham Shakespeare LLC.
Friends and family are suing her to get the money back. And they end up recovering, I think it's somewhere between $1.5 million in cash and $1.5 million in assets.
She had tried to hold onto the home that Shakespeare had bought himself, which was worth about $1.7 million. She said it was a gift, but no one believes that.
No. After they did a thorough audit of her bank account records, it's pretty obvious that she was taking and not giving.
You started this episode off by laying out the traps and pitfalls of lottery winners. So I guess this is a good time to bring this back up and bring it around.
Currently, there is a woman in New Hampshire who just won the $560 million lottery. She is actually suing the lottery commission and the state to remain anonymous. Now, when she bought her ticket, she wrote her name on the back because, well, as you could tell with Abraham and his friend Michael, you should probably do that. You need to claim your ticket as yours. Otherwise, other people can claim it as theirs and sue you in court and waste a lot of time and money. As you know, most state lotteries announce the winners. It's public record. They're saying, well, you wrote your name on there, so we have every right to put that out there. She's currently tied up in court. Charlie McIntyre, who's the executive director of the state lottery in New Hampshire, says that his hands are tied. State statutes and lottery rules clearly dictate protocols. He goes on to say that $560 million on a Powerball will change a winner's life, but said that procedures at issue were put in place for the security and integrity of the lottery and our players and our games. Now, as you can see, if you win the lottery, your name is put out there and everybody and their mother is going to ask you for money. Even prisoners can write to you because it's all public record. So if you ever win the lottery, everyone says, well, first thing you need to do is contact a lawyer and a financial planner. I would add that you should talk to somebody that's in a private detective or somebody that knows something about concealing your identity, somebody that can scrub your social media profiles, scrub you off the internet, remove you from the public record, because this happened to Abraham. I mean, one out of three lotto winners go broke or has destroyed their lives. Abraham Shakespeare told his brother, Robert Brown, that he wished he'd never won. I'd been better off broke. This is a year after he won.
And that's undoubtedly because the money changes your life. It may not change who you are, but it changes how everyone deals with you. And as you said, it ruins relationships. It makes life very difficult because you're no longer just the guy that people are just saying hey to. Now they want something from you all the time. And not necessarily everyone. We did say his mother felt that the money was evil.
I think his mother was right.
Winning that much money is shocking. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Maybe you're supposed to go out and get a financial advisor. You know, maybe you're supposed to do that. But most people will do what they think is right. And I think we could say that Abraham tried to do the right thing with his money. He helped a lot of people out. In the end, people remember him for all of the good that he did and for the kind of person that he was. And he wasn't about the money. But unfortunately, this money led to his death.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.